Well, welcome to the True Man Podcast with Mike Van Pelt, the comeback coach, helping you gain peace, clarity, and understanding in your walk with God as a man, a father, and a spouse. Hey, get involved with the show. Send your email to mike@truemanlifecoaching.com. If you're wondering what's gone adrift in my masculine soul and asking, is there more to life? This is where it begins. This is the True Man Podcast. Welcome to the True Man Podcast. This is an invitation to radical reconstruction of a man's masculine heart and soul in a place of safe community where we dare to ask questions deep-seated inside a man and explore ways to help you become a better man, a better son, a better dad, and a better spouse. Well, I'm so happy that you've taken the time to join myself and my guest here today on the True Man Podcast, and I'm thrilled to be sharing my interview with good friend and writer and fellow podcaster, Dave Brown. Now, the focus of this week's podcast is the idea of living the rebel life, which I'll let Dave do all of the heavy lifting on and describe for you in detail what that means on the podcast. But it's really about living a life of joy, excitement, and purpose. And sometimes we do this in the midst of difficult in challenging situations, as you will hear Dave describe on the podcast today. Now, I think you're going to enjoy this conversation. So with that, let's get to the interview and I'll connect back with you shortly. Well, welcome to the True Man Podcast. Now, what does it mean to be a rebel? No. I didn't say rebel. I said revel. You know, when today's guest first told me about this idea, I thought, well, that makes perfectly good sense. Why didn't I think of that? That was one of those why didn't I think of that moments. And I'm not going to define it. I'm going to leave it up to today's guest. So I want you to welcome to the podcast, Dave Brown. Now, Dave and I met through an organization called Zoe, who you can find at zoe.org. And I encourage you to go out there. Zoe helps create resources and environments to help foster community spaces for men and women. And I have to say, their retreat weekends are phenomenal, and I know Dave agrees with me wholeheartedly on that. But by profession, Dave is an ecological engineer, which is really interesting and fascinating, by the way. And I've really gotten to know him as a writer, a life and business coach, and a personal trainer. Dave has started his own podcast, The Revelious, and folks, it is absolutely amazing. Great storyteller, and I'd be remiss in saying, and it's one of the reasons why Dave is here today, he is the fiercest prayer warrior I've ever met. And it's such a pleasure to have him on the podcast. Dave, it's so wonderful to have you here. How's everything going?
Oh man, doing well. Glad to be here. It's just good to see you, Mike. I love being able to connect with you and had a wonderful morning just being outside and experiencing the temperature start to drop.
Yeah.
We were breaking records yesterday. It was the hottest we'd had in like close to 40 years. And so I think we're venturing back into fall again today, and I welcome it actually.
Yeah. So it's, we're recording this, it's fall, and you know, we're at that time of year where one day it's 80 and the next day it's 40. That's just the way it is. You know, it's fall. Yeah. It's such an incredibly lovely time of year, to say the least. So it's interesting, Dave. You know, you reached out to me several months ago and you said, I'm thinking about starting a podcast. And we talked about you doing that. And now you got this thing out there and you're just doing an amazing job with it, Dave. And I want to talk about that a little bit because, you know, as I was preparing for this interview, I wanted us to talk about prayer because, like I said in the opening here, your prayer is amazing. It's so hopeful and it's just so alive and real. But as I was preparing for this podcast, I was listening to your podcast and all your episodes are great, but one in particular just absolutely stopped me cold. And I got caught up in every word. Like I've never gotten caught up in a podcast before. And so while I want to talk about prayer, I want to talk about this podcast you did, podcast number 18, where you're talking about your wife, Brenda. And I've got to assume to a large degree, as we talk about prayer, that Brenda's death has helped you transform your prayer life and your intimacy with Christ somehow. So I'm not sure where you want to dive into that, but maybe you want to touch on that episode and how it shaped you and your life at this stage.
Yeah. Oh man. I will tell you that doing that episode was very freeing for me.
Oh,
I wanted it to be that way. And I view that episode as sort of like not just the ending of a chapter, but it was like the epilogue to a book. And so that book is now on the shelf and I can pull it out as I need to, but it's a book that's been open for a very long time. Brenda and I met 33 years ago. We married 32 years ago, and she died 22 and a half years ago. So, I mean, these are things that are really a long time ago, but they've been so much in the forefront of my life and so very formative in who I am as a person. And my life with her was sweet in many ways and very devastating in others. And we were married 10 years, 7 months, and 8 days when she died. And for those of you who don't know it, Brenda died at her own hand. And so suicide is such a difficult thing to navigate. And there is such a stigma around it. And I experienced it a lot for a year or so after Brenda died. And yeah, just the whole thing was very heartbreaking. And early on in our marital life, it drove me to my knees like nothing else.
Mm.
And I discovered that Jesus really, really does want to hear how you're feeling. And he wants to be intimately yoked together in the difficulties that you're going through. Life is intensely difficult. And Jesus, he demonstrated himself to be the rock of my salvation. And I share this in the podcast where next to meeting Jesus personally, discovering that he is at the rock bottom of life is my single greatest personal discovery. You know, we often view God as high and lifted up, and he is, but he's also at the bottom of life. You know, people talk about hitting bottom.
Yeah.
I've hit bottom, and I'll tell you something, it's rock solid because Jesus is there. He is the rock bottom of life, and no one can descend below him. And discovering that created this intimacy with him that I don't think he and I may have achieved it through something else. I know how God is, and you know, he has his plan A, his plan B, his plan C, you know, because he is the master at being able to honor one's free will, but also bring about what he ultimately desires.
Dave, talk about that a little bit. I think this is important. It was one of my big takeaways to listening to this episode. It was when you were talking about rock bottom. And why I think this is important is a lot of people do go to rock bottom and then they just sit there.
Yeah.
How can they hear God's voice when they are at rock bottom or find that hope that he's there? Oh, how would you encourage them?
Yeah, what a really good question. There's something that I started doing where I would, when I'm feeling so horrible, maybe it was following a suicide attempt by Brenda or a time where she just was struggling immensely and I didn't know where to go, but I would go to God and I would pour my heart out to him. And what I started doing, Mike, is I would share what I was feeling, and then I would immediately speak forth whatever entered my mind. And 99.9% of the time, that was Jesus speaking right back to me. And so I would be like weeping before God. And then I would hear Jesus say, "Oh, Dave, I understand completely. I know exactly what you're feeling. I've never not been there with you. And I will never not be there with you. I will always be with you." You know, just hearing those kind of things. And then, you know, and then I'm back to just bawling my eyes out. But I found that practice of voicing out loud what I'm thinking, what I'm feeling, and even pleading with God. And sometimes I was complaining. Sometimes I was angry. And, you know, it's like, there were times, man, where Jesus, I actually want to purchase, I hope this is okay to say, Jesus, I want to purchase firearms and I want to go out and take out Brenda's adopted family. I want to take him out. I felt homicidal even.
Yeah.
And Jesus to lovingly hear that and say, "I know exactly what you feel.
Oh.
I know exactly what you mean. I'm going to be with you. We're going to work through this. You're not going to need to do that." And to hear him start to even pray through me, "Oh God, I pray for Brenda's adoptive father, that he would experience you, that he would somehow hear you speaking into his soul, and that he would feel loved by you." To be brought to that kind of thing is incredibly life-changing.
Yeah.
And there's nothing like it, you know, when you are completely raw and open before God, and he knows exactly how to touch you, how to listen, how to look at you, smile, weep with you, and say the things that you're longing to hear. So that's my advice.
Wow.
You know, just being open and speaking forth what you feel God saying to you in response, because God still speaks. I am in existence right now because God still speaks. You know, when it says that God spoke everything into existence, that word is continually being spoken. Everything that's in existence is in existence because God is currently speaking it into existence right now. So he is always speaking. I just want to hear. When you're brought to a place of deep suffering, somehow the ears get opened. And mine were, and they've never closed. And I'm really grateful, bud.
Yeah, that's just, wow. I'm just virtually speechless. That's just incredible. It's real. It's authentic. I think that's what, you know, people and families go through in these moments of suicide where somebody takes their life. And basically, it just leaves us with a lot of questions.
Of course.
And, you know, and wonderment. In your case, this didn't come as a complete surprise to you. I almost gathered that you were prepared, as I listened to the podcast, that you were in some mode of preparation for the day when it would actually occur.
I lived with multiple futures before me. And I'm a prepper type person. And I grew up in Boy Scouts where "be prepared" was our slogan, you know, and so that's deeply rooted inside of me that, you know, when I know the snow's coming, I've got everything in my truck. And when it hits, I want to go out and get myself ready to be able to be out and about. And then I'll actually take exploration routes out just to make sure that I know I can get out and about should something arise where I absolutely need to get out and about. And so with Brenda, I did do a lot of preparatory work in my own heart. And I wrote a lot, as you've experienced writing.
Yeah.
As a way of channeling your thoughts and creating structure where you didn't have structure before. And God knows I need to have structure in my life. And so I started in preparing for whatever the future had, having greater structure in my life. And most of that revolved around prayer, meditation, movement, exercise, eating well, creating music, writing. I did some noveling. I have a lot of fictional things that I've written that were just so much fun to do, you know. So I have a structure of in my prayer life that started way back then of what I call icons.
Talk about this, Dave. Let's kind of transition here to your prayer life a little bit.
So in Christendom, throughout history, elements within the body of Christ have had icons. They were images that they could focus on that would be like a gateway into deeper intimacy with God. And so I love like ancient icons. I also love like more modern icons. And an example of a modern icon might be artwork that you really love. It could be movie clips. And we do this a lot in Zoe, use a lot of movie clips to really, it's like, holy crap, that is so out of the scriptures. You know, Michael always says, they're stealing my stuff, or they're stealing stuff right out of the scriptures. You know, and I'm talking about Michael Thompson, who is the founder of Zoe. He and I are really, really good friends. So there's the modern icons of movie clips and music and, know, poetry. So I have like ancient and modern icons, and having that kind of structure where, you know, if I'm feeling like I'm feeling down about something or whatever, hey, you know, maybe I need to go watch that clip where Rocky Balboa is talking to his son.
Right.
Or watch that clip where, you know, where William Wallace is on the horse going back and forth in front of his men, you know, men of Scotland, you know, I mean, I need to hear those kinds of things, you know, and, you know, there's nothing like beauty to change us. And so I love to place myself in gardens and places of beauty because it heals me. And so I'm a huge fan of gardens. I'm a huge fan of the Impressionists. I love Impressionist art, and I can sit in front of a painting, well, until they close.
I can see that. Yes.
Right. And just place myself there. And, you know, especially like you look at some of Monet's paintings, he painted many landscapes, or he painted some landscapes many times. He did it at different times to capture what the light looked like, what things looked like in the morning and, you know, during the golden hours and then during the day. And then as the sun started to go down, you know, so it's just very cool to have something like that, that centers you and that brings you into the presence of God, that makes you really in touch with your humanity.
Let's touch on that a little bit, Dave. I think this is an important topic that you're touching on, because you're bringing up words like beauty. And again, we use this a lot in the Zoe world. And the reason for that is, and we were talking about this a little bit before the podcast, and I thought we might end up going down this road. That's why I stopped you. You know, for me, and for a lot of people, I think we view prayer and worship in this corporate world where it's inside a church, and, you know, that's where it happens. And I think for a lot of people, that becomes their relationship with Christ. Maybe it's the only time that they have that time with Christ in this corporate community, in a church, you know. And but there's far more to it. You know, when we get into, you know, you're talking about artwork, you're talking about music, Christ is in the middle of all of that. It's all beautiful. And it's important that we recognize that, and that worship or prayer just, it isn't done in a church setting. Church is all around us. Is that fair to say, Dave?
Absolutely it is. Absolutely it is. You know, there's a place for corporate prayer.
Sure. 100%.
There's a place for formal prayer and formal liturgy and things like that. But the thing is that I am in church maybe a couple of hours a week.
Yeah.
And how many hours do we have in a week? Was it 168 hours? I forget what it is.
I know.
So, yeah, I have that many hours minus two where I'm not in church, So to me, the way I define prayer, I define it as life shared with God. It includes talking with him. It includes listening. But it's really just about spending the day with God. And you and I've talked about this. I love to shoot the breeze with God.
Yeah.
To go on a run with God. When I'm down in my garage, I have my training studio, and I'm wailing away on my heavy bag. Jesus and I are doing that together. He's my corner man. He's my Mick, and he's calling the numbers, and I'm throwing stuff against the bag and wearing myself out, and he's having a great time. So I just love doing stuff with God. He wants to be a part of every aspect of my life.
Why is that important to recognize, Dave? Because I'm not sure everybody recognizes God in that way. And I feel like, okay, well, you're missing. And when I say you're missing, I'm referring to myself too, because large portions of my life, I miss that intimacy. Like, hey, God, we're punching on the heavy bag right now and we're having a real good time, you know?
Yeah.
You know where I'm going with it? how can we help guys see that God is all around us? He's there when we're on that punching bag.
Yeah. Well, so Jesus to me is a master martial artist. He is a master storyteller. He is a master ecological engineer. He's a master writer. He's a master humorist. He taught Robin Williams how to be funny. That's where Robin Williams got it.
Yeah.
Right. And so I want to experience Jesus in all arenas of my life. I want us to have that kind of deep intimacy where we just share life, where he's participating in my life, he's partaking of me, and I'm participating in his and partaking of his life. And to me, it makes life, even though it's very, very difficult and can be very saddening and heartbreaking and angering,
yeah,
it brings an underlying peace and stability and joy to it. I am happy, Mike, pretty much all the time. I lay that at the feet of Jesus. He is the source of happiness. And when you really ask people ultimately, what do they want? After they get past, I want a good career, I want a comfortable place to live, and I want a great family. Really, when it gets down to it, so I often do like the so what test. You might be familiar with that. Somebody says, well, I want da 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 da. And I'm like, well, so what? Why do you want that? Well, because da 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 da. I say, oh, so what? Why do you want that? Once you really drill down, it ultimately comes down to, I want to be happy. I want these things because I think they'll make me happy. Yeah. Thing is that things don't necessarily make you happy. What makes you happy is knowing yourself just known thoroughly and loved through and through by God. I know here's how I know God. I know him as the eternal knowing one who knows me thoroughly. I love him as the loving one who loves me through and through. That is what brings deep happiness that can't be shaken. So even if I'm in the depths of suffering and sorrow, I'm happy at the same time. That is what we need from Jesus. That is what he provides ultimately.
What about that guy that's listening to this right now going, yeah, but. The yeah butters, right?
Yeah, I would. Each and every one of them has a story, and sometimes I just need to listen.
Yeah,
and that's what I enjoy doing, is coming alongside folks to discover more of who they are as someone known and loved by God, and Jesus understands everyone who says, yeah, but. He knows that story inside and out. And I want to know it too. And then,
yeah.
And then maybe in listening to that one will get a sense that, well, you know what? Usually when somebody says, yeah, but, it's because there's something that they feel makes them unlovable, makes them feel like nobody really wants to know them. So how in heaven would God want to love me and know me? There's often so many things that are just that have gotten in the way of them feeling loved by God. And so to the yeah, but person, I'm like, let's just put ourselves in the presence of God. Oh, let's go shoot some hoops for a bit. Just have fun. And let's invite Jesus, because Jesus is the one that taught Dr. J how to sink, you know, a skyhook. And I might be dating myself with that.
That's okay. We have not had a Dr. J, to the best of my knowledge, recollection. I don't think I've had a Dr. J reference on the podcast, but I'm okay with that.
You know, or Michael Jordan. He taught Michael Jordan how to do that dunk that he does. That he's so famous.
Man. There you go. We've right. got Dr. J reference and Michael Jordan on the same podcast. Now we're talking. But so, you know, it does bring up a really good point. I mean, there are blessings that God bestows on everybody that becomes part of our story. I mean, you know, Michael Jordan is a lot of things. I'm sure he's a loving, you know, husband, a loving father. I'm sure he's a believer. But Michael Jordan was blessed to entertain all of us.
Right.
Dr. J was blessed to entertain all of us. Robin Williams, you know, obviously had a lot of evil spirits surrounding him, but he was blessed to entertain all of us. And what an amazing thing that people get these skills. I mean,
yeah,
even you, Dave, I mean, you know, the things that you, you know, do, like, I'm not a martial artist. You know, I don't do that. That is a blessing that has been bestowed to you. And so there, you know, we all have, and I guess where I'm going with that is, because I see this a lot where guys, you know, it gets into this whole worthiness factor. Like they don't feel worthy.
Yeah.
You know, like their story doesn't matter, but their story does matter. And I think that's what you and I, you know, are trying to get out of them, is that, yeah, there's a larger story out there, but you play a role in that larger story. Your story matters. You're worthy. And it's so important. And it hurts me when I see somebody that's going through that pain of feeling that unworthiness.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, me too. You know, and so there are some things that we talk about in Zoe. It's like, what has eBay taught us about the worth of anything? Just kind of it's a little bit of a rhetorical question.
Yeah.
It's taught us that something is worth whatever people are willing to pay for. Right? So the creator of the universe thought you, Mike Van Pelt, were worth so much that he gave his own life. Mm-hmm. That's what he paid to win you back. That's how worthy you are, how worthwhile you are. And I would say that to anybody. That's something that I hear Jesus speaking into me all the time. Dave, you are so valuable to me, so very valuable to me. And I am so very interested in you and every part of your life.
Yeah.
And it's really neat to hear Jesus start to say those kinds of things to us. And yeah, so.
More importantly, Dave, I think it's important to know, you know, because that awareness that is available to you.
Yes.
You know, it's not something that the, you know, pastor said over the top of you on Sunday or whatever. I mean, it's available.
Exactly.
Man, how life-giving is that?
Incredibly life-giving. That is life.
Yeah.
To know oneself loved to that degree. That is life-giving. it is the essence of life with God, life shared with God. That's the essence of prayer, is experiencing myself, known that deeply, loved that much, and pursued that greatly.
I love that word.
Yeah. Pursued. You know, speaking of pursued, you know, if you ask folks, you know, what is their favorite psalm, they'll say probably Psalm 23. Most people will say Psalm 23 is their favorite psalm. You know, I have spent so much time in that psalm. Psalm 23, verse 6 is the last verse in it. And it says, surely goodness and loving kindness will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. If you look at that word follow, here's what it really means. Surely, O God, you, loving kindness incarnate, will stalk me like a predator all the days of my life. So God, our loving God, is stalking me like a hungry predator, but he doesn't want to eat me. It's all beneficent.
Yeah.
Right? But that is the nuanced interpretation of that word that is typically rendered follow. And I love when I read that, I love thinking of Aslan, this incredibly powerful kingly predator that could rip me to shreds in no time, wants only good things for me. He wants only good things for me. And he is constantly pursuing me like that.
That's so good. And is that where, I mean, people would know this. I know this because I know you. But is that where your prayer life is so, like, to me, Dave, you just like reach into a prayer and grab it by the horns. Like, I mean, you just really are, I can't even put the words to it, but you're so expressive, so adamant, so full of life when you're praying over people and in prayer, and it's so confident and real and authentic and authoritative. And, you know, as I've gotten around you, I'm like, well, that's what it's supposed to be.
Exactly.
Right. And so many of us, and I'm speaking about me, I sometimes pray passively. Almost like I don't expect it to happen, what I'm praying for.
Sure.
How do you come to that point where you are praying so authoritatively? If that's the right word, I don't know how you would describe it.
I actually love that word. What a great question. It really all stems from my relationship with Jesus. He is my big brother. I'm his baby brother, and I'm around him all the time. And a lot of times, like, Jesus, I'm not necessarily looking for you to do something for me right now. I just want to be around you. I want to be around the things that you're doing.
Yeah.
And the thing is when you are around Jesus as your big brother, and Jesus is the consummate big brother, he epitomizes every good thing about a big brother. He's been around the corner. He's gone through a lot. He's developed a lot of skills. He's got a lot of wisdom, and he's got patience and time. And he loves hanging out with me, this bumbling, fumbling little kid that keeps making messes and tripping and skinning his knee and falling off his bike, you know, and falling out of a tree. You know, Jesus is right there, and he shows me, Dave, this is how I do it. Let me show you how you can. And we take these little steps. And so he and I have been practicing prayer together for 4 or 5 decades. And so I'm becoming an older boy. I'm not the 4-year-old I once was, you know, and the thing is that the closer I get to Jesus, the more I realize that Jesus's intent for me is to be just like him. And that word authority, and you were using that, is huge for me. I pray in the authority that Jesus has given me. It's the same authority that he had when he walked on planet Earth. It's no different. Now, granted, and we talk about this in Zoe, while I have the authority to hold a chainsaw, that doesn't necessarily mean I know how to use it yet, right? While it is my chainsaw, I own it. You know, if I'm a five-year-old boy, I can hardly lift it off the ground, let alone start it and wield it, you know? So my big brother has given me the chainsaw, and he's been teaching me for years how to use it. And now I'm sculpting ice with my chainsaw. And that is nothing but a result of moment by moment, moment training of being with my big brother, watching how he does it, and then him coaching me in little ways all along. And so I'm wanting to just be more and more like Jesus. And I want to pray the way he does. I want to walk in the authority that he had because I have it. I want to do things out of the same intimacy he had with the Father because he desires me to have that.
Yeah.
And so that's sort of like what I would call like the power behind the badge of authority that I have, that you have, Mike. The authority in and of itself doesn't really do a whole lot, but it's the power. We have the weightiness of God Almighty, his kingdom, and the legacy of what Jesus showed us by coming to planet Earth and showing us what being a real human is, what being a man is, what being a woman is, what being a friend is, a true friend.
Yeah.
Who empties himself into those around him, is willing to go to the utmost extreme for someone else to benefit. So that's my big brother, bud.
I could just feel so much passion in that. And I love the analogy, maybe because I'm the big brother in my family, but, you know, and maybe that means I need to step it up as a big brother. I don't know. You know, I just love that. You know, one thing before we wrap up for sure, and I want you to just talk about the rebel life. In some respects, I think you just did, but
sure.
But people may be going, okay, what is this rebel thing? What does that mean? Describe being a rebel on your own terms.
Sure. So the word rebel, it means celebrate. To revel in something is to celebrate. And I want to live a celebratory life. Mm-hmm. I love being happy, as I talked about earlier, being joyous. So when I was thinking about like The Rebellious, which is my podcast, I am combining rebel with rebellious. Because I've always sort of been rebellious in my life.
Yeah.
Not necessarily in a bad way, but more like, I see what's going on. It's like, I think I'm going to go the opposite way.
You know? It might be a good thing in this day and age, actually.
Yeah. The older I get, the more I see the culture around me, it's like whatever I see is being lauded out there and done, I'm going to do it the exact opposite.
Yep. You know,
so
for sure.
So for me to be a rebellious one is to be one who has devoted his life to pursuing deep and intimate relationship and intimacy with God, with my own self, with the people around me, and with the whole of creation. So it's about developing intimacy in what I call those four foundational relationships of life. Relationship with God, with oneself, with the people around oneself, and with just the whole of creation, which includes nature, includes the economy, the job world, the neighborhood you live in, you know. And so a rebellious one is one who's pursuing all that. And there are some characteristics that I've seen in my own life where I am a rebellious one is iconoclastically happy. And what I mean by that is through my own happiness, I'm tearing down the things that tend to rob people of their happiness.
Mm.
You know, and I tend to enjoy deep times of quietness and solitude. I don't own a cell phone. I like quietness. I like being able to come away from the world and to enjoy just being with my own thoughts. There are not a lot of people out there that enjoy being with their own thoughts. I do. That's a part of being rebellious, being living that revel life of shalom, where your life is integrated and you've got integratedness of belief. You've got congruency in how you approach life. Congruency is a huge, that's a huge value for me as a rebellious one. And really what I mean by that is I am living in a way that is, I pray, honoring to God, to myself, to the people around me, and to all creation. And so that's really what it means to be rebellious. And I can be serious at times. I can be very irreverent at times. And the thing is, I learned that.
I find that hard to believe.
Yeah. Well, I don't mean like I'm flippant toward God, but
yeah.
But you know, I don't really like a lot of religious things that tend to get in the way of people really enjoying God and other people.
Yeah.
So a rebellious one sort of pulls those things down. A rebellious one also is not afraid to stand up for what is right. I have made a lot of people angry and upset through my take on things. And those who come listen to my podcast, I would imagine everybody is going to be offended at some point or another. And I'm not afraid to offend anybody. I'm not afraid to hurt people's feelings.
Yeah.
As much as I care about people, like you, Mike, I care about you to death, bud, but I'm not afraid to hurt your feelings. Not that I set out to do that, but sometimes, like in my own life, my feelings are going to be hurt at times.
Yeah.
But my aim is, if your feelings are hurt, it was in the interest of loving you and coming alongside you.
Right.
And, you know, helping to.
Well, there is an honesty and authenticity and a truth to that.
Yes.
That is not only important, but vitally needed in a world where people show up wearing a mask and posing quite a bit.
Yes.
Now, some people would find that offensive that I just said that. And that's fine. Those are also the people that probably need to take a deep look in the mirror.
Of course. Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah. You know, agreed. So I think, you know, when we talk like this, I think you would agree that it's, yeah. I'm the same way, Dave. I'm going to offend people at some of the things I say in my podcast. Not because I intend to. I absolutely don't. You know, it comes from, you know, if I say something, it comes from a truth, a belief. It's said out of prayerful consideration.
Yes.
And so, you know, I believe that God, you know, helped me craft those words. And it's no different than, you know, prior to every podcast, I have solitude and prayer that God will be, you know, at the center of everything that I'm thinking and saying throughout that recording. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but there's no two ways around it, Dave. When you're talking about the things that we're talking about, sometimes people's feelings are going to get hurt, and that's not intentional.
It's not,
you know, at all. But that's also where we find ourselves, I do believe, a much more sensitive environment that we're living in these days, much of it self-induced by people going with the herd versus like you and I probably do. Like I'm going, you may go to the right, I'm going to the left. That's how that's going to work out.
Yeah. I think it was, isn't it C.S. Lewis was one of the first ones that said that if you are going against the herd as it's going off a cliff, you're going to be the one labeled as crazy.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, if some folks label me as crazy, I'd say, well, okay, you're probably right.
Yeah.
To some degree, you know.
I'd like there to be more rebellious people in the
world.
Thanks,
bud. Me too.
Yeah. I'm gonna vote for more rebellious, Dave. That we can agree on. So as we wrap up today, Dave, tell everybody how they can find you, how they can get a hold of you. We'll of course put all this information in the show notes, but how can they get a hold of you and even find your podcast?
Yeah. So I have a website, myrevellife.com. And you can go to that and you can access the Revelious podcast there. There's a contact form there where you can reach out to me. I also have an email address, dave@myrevellife.com. And so I'm available. I love when people reach out, and I do Zoom meetings with folks, do phone calls, and then folks who live in this area. I live in the Raleigh-Durham area. So if folks are in this area, look me up, because I'd love to grab coffee or go hang out. You know, we can go, you know, beat the crap out of my bag if you want. you know, so I'm semi-retired, and so I don't work a whole lot. I do a lot of things, but I don't work a whole lot. And so I try to make myself available to folks. And yeah, so look me up on myrebellife.com, send me an email, or reach out to me here in the Raleigh-Durham area. Of course, if you come on a Zoe retreat, come see me, because I'd love to chat with you.
Absolutely. Yeah, come find Dave. This is so much fun. I could probably go on all day, but of course we can't have an all day podcast. That would just be too much for everybody. So we'll just kind of live with where we're at. But man, we talked about a lot of great things, and I so appreciate you, Dave. It's been wonderful to get to know you, and I enjoyed having you on the podcast here and spending a little bit more time with you.
Yeah, vice versa, Mike. I love you to death, brother. I love your podcast, and I wish you all the best, and I look forward to us being able to do more things together.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for coming on, Dave.
You got it, bud. You take care, okay?
Well, I'm sure you found Dave to be an incredible human being, and I know it's hard for many people to wrap their arms around the fact that something like Dave being at his lowest moment, as he described his wife Brenda's death, there in the midst of it, he found Jesus. Jesus is always there, isn't he? Well, and what an incredible thing to know that. You know, in a world that often feels fast-paced and demanding, many of us find ourselves caught up in the hustle and bustle of everything going on, really neglecting the importance of truly living in the moment. And the Revel Life is a philosophy that encourages individuals to break free from the mundane and embrace a lifestyle centered around that joy, passion, and purpose in their lives. And in fact, it's about being present in the moment to be there for the most important people in our lives. Now, as you heard Dave describe, despite the fact he knew Brenda had some challenges, he didn't leave her. He didn't persecute her. He actually loved and cherished her in the best way he could. And he turned to God for aid in the midst of that very challenging situation, which is exactly what we should do. What about you? What's at the core of your Revel Life? How about more than just fleeting moments of happiness? It could be a holistic approach to life that involves conscientious choices and intentional living. It's about finding joy in the ordinary, embracing spontaneity, and cultivating a mindset that values experiences over possessions. The Revel Life encourages individuals to savor the present, celebrate success, and navigate challenges with resilience and optimism. Celebrating the Revel Life, well, it's about the pursuit of passion and purpose. You know, sometimes it's a challenge for us to understand or know our purpose. It involves discovering what sets your soul on fire and aligning your actions with your values, whether it's a career change, a creative pursuit, or a personal project. Living the Revel Life means actively seeking out activities that bring fulfillment and meaning to your life. Now, in addition to that, here's an important one, right? A positive mindset is crucial for embracing the Revel Life. Adopting a positive mindset allows you to eliminate negative challenges with resilience and find silver linings in adversity and appreciate the beauty of life's journey. It also help you, if you're living the Revel Life, nurture your relationships. Boy, how important is this? Human connections are at the heart of the Revel Life. This is extremely important,
especially in the world of masculinity, where many men don't have close relationships. And as Dave and I discuss, we met through an organization called Zoe that serves the hearts of men and women and couples. And at the center of what they do, they help heal hearts and connect others to build relationships. And the good news is, on the next show, I'm going to have Michael Thompson, who leads the Zoe organization, on, so you can learn more about it. So I'm excited for that. You know, living the Revel life is about developing, probably more than anything, an intimate relationship with Christ. Now, Dave and I talked about prayer, and I don't think there's any doubt about it. As your prayer life grows, as you study more scripture, and you grow in your intimacy with Christ, you will live a Revel life that people seek you out and want to learn more. So in conclusion, living the Revel life is an ongoing journey. It's a commitment to embracing joy, passion, purpose in every facet of your life. And by defining your values, fostering positive relationships, and balancing work and play, you can cultivate a lifestyle that resonates with authenticity and fulfillment. Now, as you embark on this journey, remember that the Revel life is about the quality of experiences, not the quantity, and it's never too late to start living a life that truly reflects your essence. Embrace the revelry, savor the journey, and live life to its fullest. Now, living a Revel life may be something that doesn't come easy. Maybe what we talked about today, you're not familiar with. Now, if you'd like to know more or just talk about living your best life, just reach out to me at mike@truemanlifecoaching.com. You can also check out my website at truemanlifecoaching.com. And I am happy. In fact, I'd be thrilled to death to set up a free initial call with you and talk about what's going on in your life and see if maybe there's a possibility about coming alongside you and walking alongside with you so that we can mentor and guide and get you developing your best Revel life now. Well, I hope you enjoyed today's podcast. And if you did, please leave me a great review on your favorite podcast channel. Well, thanks to Dave for being on the show today. So enjoyed that conversation. And until next week, go out and make this your best day ever. In fact, make it your best Revel day ever. Thanks. Have a good week. Improve your life today with Mike Van Pelt and True Man Life Coaching. Let's develop a roadmap of discovery that leads to success and satisfaction in your life. For additional information and details on how to schedule an initial coaching call, go to truemanlifecoaching.com.